Hello, I'm Howard and welcome to the 93-20 Review Podcast, the show that welcomes Manchester United back to European football, back to where they belong, the Europa League. We're looking back at a tough win at Nottingham Forest on a stressful Sunday, just a bit, as the title race draws ever closer to an end. But what end? To look back on the win and more, the weekend as a whole, or certainly Sunday as a whole, delighted to be joined by Ehsan and Bailey. Good afternoon, Ehsan, how are you?
Afternoon, Howard. I'm in very good spirits. You're right. It was a pretty tense and a nervy Sunday, but we came out of it the right side. So I'm happy. And also, you'd be delighted to know it's been absolutely pissing it down in Ibiza for the last 48 hours. Good. So it feels very much like a cold, grey April day in Manchester.
Just looking around. No, it's fine here. So, sorry. The one day when it's not raining. It will be within an hour, so. Don't worry
about it. You jinxed yourself.
I know, yeah. Well, it's getting to a balmy 18 degrees later this week, so. But, hey, I think I put my shorts on in February anyway, so. Just getting ahead of myself. Bailey, good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I think you can't really put two better fixtures together on a Sunday when it comes to the title race. And then Liverpool delivered their soap opera on a Saturday, so quite a weekend.
Not just Liverpool on a Saturday, but I guess we don't even bother with that other team now, do we? So, except for pithy intros, of course. So, Bailey, were you bothered about the Liverpool result? Or had they already gone once they'd lost at Goodison?
I think when it comes to this kind of stage of the season now, it's only really dependent on if you drop results. You're just looking at your next game. So if we did drop points to Forest, then it becomes more of a concern, doesn't it? But I think right now it's just about City, whether we win that next game.
Well, it's weird, Ehsan, after their defeat at Goodison, you look at the team, you know, everyone's saying, well, it's over now for Liverpool, and you know, I agreed. And then you look at the table and went, well, actually, they're only three behind Arsenal still. You know, it's one game. But then they've got a worse goal difference. But the key point here is they're in a three-horse title race, not a two-horse. So in a way, they'd need two other teams to drop points. And it did feel like it was all over before West Ham. Nevertheless, still an enjoyable 90 minutes, wasn't it, to see them knocked out for good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rarely right on these podcasts when I make predictions. So when I am right about making a prediction, I do like to crow about it. And I have been saying for about 3 months now that Arsenal were the team that were going to go the distance with City this year, that I just didn't feel that. If you go back to all of the post-Klopp announcement last-minute winners and the sort of the emotional wave that they were riding, there was always a really, really, really big possibility that if they got a couple of bad results and they felt like they were maybe a bit out of it, that the whole thing would come crumbling down. And I think the moment at which Salah and Klopp decided to throw their handbags at each other on Saturday afternoon was the moment where the whole thing came crumbling down. And I do think, actually, I think you're right about the fact that, for me, it's not that post-Everton, oh, it's all over, there's no way that Liverpool can catch City or Arsenal. It was more the overall performance in that game. It suggested that something had already cracked. And then to be beat so comprehensively, and to have a second half in a derby where you're losing and you don't really create anything. I think you saw against West Ham how catastrophic that result was for them from a psychological and emotional point of view, because they played like a team that had nothing to play for. It felt like a preseason friendly to me. It was a really, really weird atmosphere.
Well, there wasn't one, yeah. Because West Ham fans have had enough of their manager, I think. Look at their place in the table, think they're doing all right, but it is something ridiculous. Like, they've only won a few in the last 20 games. You know, it's a terrible form, basically. And I think, obviously, the Moyes era has run its course. There was no atmosphere. And West Ham weren't even playing well at all. And Liverpool couldn't win it. So, yeah, I think that's blindingly obvious to me. Klopp's gone, basically. You know, he's already gone, hasn't he? He's phoning it in, and it completely transmits itself to the team. The fact that he's absolutely knackered, it's just not there anymore. So, oh well, what a shame.
Fucking hell, man. I can't believe I've sworn so early in this podcast, but it is truly hilarious. It is one of the funniest things that I've seen in a long time. I think as soon as Klopp and Salah started arguing, my mind immediately went to that interview that he did 6-8 weeks ago when Klopp said, maybe some other managers collect trophies, but I collect relationships.
Relationships end.
Exactly.
Eras end.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll just say it off air to Bailey. I think, I think it's Gary Neville said there's only one winner normally with stuff like that. But of course, Salah knows that Klopp's going, so that winner's probably different on this occasion. So, and of course, the PR machine says he's staying next season. It's been rolled out today. So, anyway, it was fun to watch. And I think, actually, Liverpool would have been stronger if they'd sell him in the summer and use that money. But hey, we'll see. I don't know. It can't be this terrible Salah for another season. He's been absolutely appalling. Can have no complaints from being benched, to be honest. So, anyway, great fun. And yeah, we haven't even got time to laugh at United. So never mind. To Sunday, Bailey. Was it nerve-wracking that day? Was it nerve-wracking enough for you? Did you watch the Arsenal match first? Because I'd be interested in both of your thoughts on that match itself. A weird game in many respects.
I think if I start with the Arsenal game, it's always delivered that North London derby, hasn't it? Because I think neither team really has the bottle, but they both have the quality. So you always have a kind of up and down game where somebody gets a lead, somebody comes back, somebody makes a mistake. And it was very much like that again. Whereas I think for the City game, for me, I was much more nervous heading into that than the Brighton one, knowing that Wolves had done a double previously under Nuno against us, and we've had had the kind of struggles against those sort of teams.
No, I think it was worse following straight on from the Arsenal match, to be honest. Because you put the Arsenal match on, never expect Spurs to do you a favour, of course, ever, because Spurs will be Spurs. But you know that it's a derby, and they might do, and so that pressure just ramped in between the two games, basically from the first one finishing to the second one starting. And the first 10 minutes didn't really help in that respect. Eysan, what about you? What did you make of the North London derby?
I mean, it was an entertaining game. I think Arsenal are an incredibly good football team. I think that goes without saying. And I think maybe the big difference between Arsenal and Spurs for me is that there is a lack of... I would say that for all of the kind of entertaining football that Spurs play under Ange, there's a little bit too much of a soft centre. And I feel as though they've got too many individuals that are just prone to making... I think if you play that high line and you play attacking football like that, and we've been through this with Guardiola, I think if you play in that fashion, defenders can't make mistakes, because you make an individual mistake and you're given a goal up straight away. And just in general, you look at the defending for the set piece for the first goal, it's just really bad, really, really, really bad. Mm. And the other thing I would say is, I'm really impressed with Arsenal. I've been impressed with them all season. I think they are a little bit machine-like in that there is a spine of maybe eight, nine players who just never get injured and play every single game. The system is fixed. The way they play is fixed. They're so strong defensively. They're so compact as a team. They attack with such fervour. They're just a really impressive football team. And they're a really young team as well. They're going to get better and better. And if they continue to get their recruitment almost always right, then they're going to be a force for a while.
Yeah. And a lot of that comes obviously from Arteta. Which shows the Pep effect in a way. Bailey, would you have rather City had played first? I remember on the Netflix documentary, it did show a scene where the players do take note of when a title rival is playing just before they're due to play. But I assume once they've clocked the result, they're focused on their game and it don't make much difference. Did it make much difference to you?
Not particularly, but I think if you go back through the season, you can always kind of find different examples where it's worked either way for either team, whoever's been in that title race. But I did see Pep said that they knew about the result. And then I think it's this morning, Ake said that on the bus, the Arsenal game was still on. And then the players that weren't starting were still watching it in the changing room. So obviously it was part of it. But I don't think you can kind of say because Arsenal picked up their points, it excused how we performed in the Forest game.
Oh, no, I wasn't suggesting that. No, I personally, obviously, whatever the result at Spurs, I don't know. I assume this City performance would have been exactly the same. I don't think it affected how it played out. But we'll get to that anyway, obviously. And, Sam, how were your nerves helped by the news that Phil Foden and Diaz were not in the squad due to illness?
I don't think that really affected my view on the game. I think we're at a point where when you look at the fixtures that are left, with the exception of Spurs away is a game where ideally you want all your best players available. But outside of that game, you look at the rest of these fixtures, and if City don't win them, it's on them. It doesn't matter who the 11 players are that get picked, because they're all capable of beating the teams that are in front of them. In a way, a lot of people had the view that Forest would be a big test. I did sort of agree with it, but I was calm in that I feel almost like, as I say, like, you've got to win these games. And if you end up dropping points because they outfight you or outbattle you or outthink you, you've got to wear that as well. And this season, I think this season, it has been, I've said this all the way through, there's no gimmies in the, away from home, you are not rolling anybody over in the Premier League except for Man United. Yeah. Everybody else, you just, Man United and Sheffield United are the two teams you're probably going to roll over and tickle their tummies, but nobody else really in this league can you go away and expect to roll a team over. So I was quietly confident, even after the team sheet dropped and Foden and Diaz weren't in it, I was still quietly confident that we had enough with the 11 on the pitch to beat Forest.
What do you think of the rest of the lineup?
Yeah, I was interested to see Doku on the right, Doku and Grealish together. I was surprised there was no Kovacic. Definitely a little bit surprised by that. Disappointed that there was no Haaland and that that Alvarez was still in the team. Yeah, but other than that, it was fine. I mean, I expect Walker, Rodri, Ake, De Bruyne, Haaland now that he's back. I expect these lads to start every game that's left. So, no massive surprises for me.
Bailey, Forrest could maybe should have been ahead after 30 seconds. And that perhaps set the tone for the entire half.
Yeah, I think they gave City a lot of problems, didn't they, really? Switching to that back five. Kyle Walker, I think we've seen throughout this season, has definitely had games where he's had lapses, and City have always been vulnerable, definitely at in the wide areas where the fullbacks are, haven't they? So I don't think it was a surprise, but I think my surprise was more that when the ball did get into the box, we did really struggle to kind of deal with those situations.
Hey, son, your thoughts? I think pretty early doors it felt like... This is not playing out how I'd hoped it to be honest.
No, but you know, something that jumped out at me really early on, like in the first 10 minutes, was there's a tactical problem here. Because whenever an opposition team finds space easily against City, whenever City begin to look like, yeah, what the hell's going on here? That to me suggests that the opposition manager has done something that has... I don't want to say outthought Guardiola, but maybe caught Pep a little bit on the hop. I hadn't realised, but Forrest have not played a back five under Nuno since he came in. So I can't imagine that City had prepared for a back five. I suspect that they'd probably prepared for Forrest to play with a back four. I think in the main, they've played 4-2-3-1, unless I'm mistaken. I think he prepared for that. And I think you see that in the... It seemed really obvious to me really early on that... Gvardiol and Walker were coming in really narrow. They were not out hugging the touchline. And that, in a dead basic way, from the first 10 minutes on, that was just a massive problem, because the two wingbacks were effectively attacking Doku and Grealish. And if they got beyond them, there was loads of space, because Walker and Gvardiol were not defending that part of the pitch.
Thanks for listening to the first 15 minutes of the show. To listen to the full podcast and all our contents, including reviews, previews, analysis, quizzes and much more, go to 9320.com to sign up now, or simply click the link in the description. So what are you waiting for? Go to 9320.com now for the best, most passionate, impartial coverage of Manchester City and beyond.